Well, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yud Bet of Sefer Hosea, chapter 12 of the book of Hosea. I once heard a guy speak in an educational context, and one of the things he said was, to have something be heard one time, you have to repeat it 10 times. And then he said it again, and again, and again, and again. And he said it several times. And he, over the course of a 45-minute or an hour presentation, he came around to making that point repeatedly. And part of what that suggests is that the most effective way, or one of the effective ways that you can get points across and get people to really absorb and retain what you're trying to say, is by finding different ways of circling around the same central topics. So as we come to Perek Yud Bet, and here we're in the closing parts really of the Sefer Hosea, because the end of Perek Yud Bet will lead into a Haftorah that will take us through Perek Yud Gimel, and then Perek Yud Dalet is another famous Haftorah. So we're really in the final pieces of the book of Hosea, and our central themes are going to come out again here, themes of the Jewish people not living up to their early promise, them not being faithful to Hashem in the way they should be, they're turning to Avodah Zarah leading to or being part of a lack of faithfulness in general, meaning a lack of following laws of honesty and appropriateness in general, and all that is going to come out in our Perek, as well as we've seen it before. So Perek Yud Bet starts with Sivavuni v'chachash Ephraim uv'mirmah Beit Yisrael. The northern kingdom, Ephraim and Beit Yisrael, have surrounded with v'chachash, which is deceit, and the mirmah is trickery. So that whole idea of deceit and trickery, Rashi thinks it's a reference to Avodah Zarah, and to the fact that they... I'm sorry, Rashi thinks that it might be literal, but that they just are involved in trickery and wrong, and we'll see Avodah Zarah later, idol worship later, but Radak thinks it might be a reference just to the idol worship itself. And that it's surrounding because the Beit HaMikdash is in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, and that's the only real place that that they're sticking with it, except that the next pasuk, the pasuk ends with, V'Yehuda od rad im kel v'im kedoshim ne'eman. That Yehuda, the northern kingdom, is still standing firm with Hashem, is still solid with Hashem, and with the Holy One. So, the Radak points out, because that when the king would worship Hashem, and by and large the southern kings, the kings of Yehuda, are listed in Tanakh as being those who worship Hashem and follow Hashem. So when that happens, the people follow. This fits in with what we've seen in the Radak several times before. The Radak was a believer in the power and the role of the monarchy in ensuring the moral fiber or the religious fiber of the people at large. Whether that's true always, the people are willing to follow their leaders, that's a whole different question, and is part of the question that leads into the question about democracy and whether democracy is a worthwhile way of running a country and things like that, but does not need to be our topic today. What is interesting, though, is the point that Yehuda, at this point, so Hosea is talking in the end of the northern kingdom's time, right? Because at the end of Hosea's career, Chizkiyahu is the king over the southern kingdom, and it's in Chizkiyahu's time that the northern kingdom gets taken away. So in that time, we're still looking at the southern kingdom, at Yehuda, as being largely radim kel, firm with Hashem. It's already a little not as true, because part of what Hosea is complaining about are actions that Achav is taking, and those who remember the book of Malachim remember that it's really in Achav's time that the northern kingdom starts creating ties and connections to the southern kingdom, starts creating ties and connections to the northern kingdom. If that's true, then it would suggest that they weren't as firm and strong im kel, rad im kel, as we might have liked them to have been. Be that as it may, the picture is that they are largely sticking with Hashem, they are largely faithful to Hashem, and that's why, in contrast to the northern kingdom being held up as a counterexample and saying, look, they're still doing the right thing. What's striking about that then is, though, that the really terrible times come, there's already some diminution, like I said, but the really bad times, when they really abandon and are blamed for abandoning Hashem, come after Ephraim, after the northern kingdom, after Yisrael, goes into Galut, goes into exile. So that's very interesting, because it means that not only didn't they learn the lesson from seeing Yisrael go into Galut, they almost learned the exact opposite lesson. It's almost as if seeing Yisrael fail by virtue of their idol worship led the Yehuda to think, well, I'll do it better, or I'll be better at it. And it's very striking, very surprising to see that that's the way it went. On Odvadim Kale also, there's a very interesting, I think, there's a Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, that says, there's a debate there about how it came about the Jews went into Yam Suf, went into Great Yam Suf, so one version has that everybody's fighting over who would get to go into the Yam Suf first, and then Nachshon Ben Amidav just jumps in and says, fine, I'll do it. And then Rabbi Yehuda comes along there in the Gemara and he says, Lo kach hayam ma'aseh, that's not the way it was. That when the sea had not yet split, and Hashem is looking for some act of faith by the Jewish people to help the miracle along, so the way that Rabbi Yehuda thought it happened was that nobody was willing to go in. They're all saying, oh, I'm not going to be first. Right, that's the exact opposite model, until you Nachshon Ben Amidav jumps in, and that makes it a whole different picture of what Nachshon is doing. It's interesting on its own, if everybody's fighting over the right to go in, he just jumps in. That teaches you one kind of lesson. But if everybody is saying, well, I'm not going to be the one who's going to go in, and then he jumps in, that's even more so. And then they quote our, and Rebuta quotes our pasuk. So, Avinu Bechacha, Shephraim, my way, Israel, Ephraim, and the rest of the Jews were surrounding me with denial and not wanting to be part of this miracle until Yehuda Od Radim Kale. And if that's true, then it's also, I mean, if you accept that Gemara's reading of it, it also means that part of what's going on here is, as we'll see later in the Perek, a hearkening back to our earlier times, and an attempt to remind us of times when we were better than we are now. Pasuk Bet, Ephraim, Ro'ev Ruach, Ro'dev Kadim, Ephraim, the northern kingdom is trying to harvest the wind, and tend to the wind, and shepherd the wind, and he's chasing it, Kaleom, Kazav, Vashod Yerben, all day long, he increasingly has denial and deceit and wrong, and then leading to calamity, Shod and Shever, to break and famine and all the terrible things that could happen. And we'll read them, Ashur Yichrotu, and they make a covenant with Ashur, and they export oil to Mitzrayim in the hope that those gifts will protect them from any terrible times that might be coming to them. So another of the themes of Hosea being that they turn, instead of turning to Hashem, they turn to Ashur and Mitzrayim for assistance and for hope. Pasuk Gimel V'riv L'Hashem Im Yehuda. So even though at this point we're still saying Yehuda Od Radim Kel, but so the question will be: is this a prediction about the future, or about now? So Rashi thinks it means Hashem is just telling them what's going to happen to the northern kingdom and doesn't want them to complain about the lack of justice of it. So that to some extent, part of what Hosea is doing, aside from wanting hopefully Yisrael maybe would do tshuva and be able to avoid it, even if that is highly unlikely. And we would almost despair of that. The Rivim Yehuda, according to Rashi, would be that Hashem wants to make sure that Yehuda understands what's happening and why it's happening. Clearly, that message didn't get across to them nearly as much as we would have liked, because it was after Yehuda, Yisrael went into exile, that we saw them descend even more so into their own idol worship and problems. Radak thinks it's a prediction about the future, and for all that until now, they've still stayed faithful to the Bein HaMikdash and the service of Hashem in that sense. They're going to descend, and therefore that's going to lead to a Riv in Yehuda, Yaakov, Kidrachav, and to punish all the Jewish people like they deserve, Kima'alalav Yashivlo, like their strayings is what is returned to them. So that whole idea of like their strayings is what is returned to them, another crucial theme, but one that's very difficult to have, even in our days, meaning even after all the Jewish people have gone through, I still think it's true. And I say this a lot because it's striking to me, and it's bothersome to me how often you hear people who see themselves as believers in Torah, Mitzvot, and Hashem denying this. But the point is being made over and over again that what is happening, at least on a national level to the Jewish people, is a reflection of them and their relationship with Hashem as a people. So we have often people who will vigorously protest this, and it may be that we'll choose not to say it out loud so often because we know that people are unwilling to listen to it. That's a political choice. But that it actually has actually led to a situation where many, many people refuse to believe that it's true anymore and refuse to accept the truth of it. So that's a much more problematic aspect of our current religious atmosphere, and it's one that comes up, I think, often, too often, and that we need to pay attention to, because that's what's going on here in the Navi. But Pasuk Dalet Babeten Akavet Achiv Vonosara Et Elokim. So both Rashi and Radak everybody agrees that what's going on here is that Hashem is trying to point out that there's good, solid reason why the Jews should be understanding what's going on and recognizing that it's their relationship with Hashem that determines their success and their good. the reasons are that going back to the very foundations of our history, there are things that Hashem has done that irrevocably and unalterably demonstrate our relationship with Hashem. So one example of those kinds of things is that when Yaakov was in his mother's womb, he was holding on to Esau's heel when Esau came out. So that's a miracle. The Radak goes into the physicals of it. Really, the Radak assumes the twins are in separate sacks inside the mother, and he says, so the idea that you can break through the sack and grab onto the ankle, that's obviously a miracle, let alone the fact that babies don't have any kind of, as far as we know, any kind of real consciousness in terms of the ability to know and to be aware of what's going on. So Radak says, and Rashi says too, that that's what's going on here. Hashem's pointing out that's right. It wasn't a natural event. It wasn't Yaakov in his mother's womb knew enough to want to grab onto Esau's ankle on the way out, and he was trying to protest that Esau was getting out first. It's nothing like that. It was a miracle from Hashem, and the point of the miracle was to demonstrate to us Hashem's connection with us and the fact that Hashem was setting us up to be a special people right from then. Uva ono sarat elokim, and when he grew older, Yaakov, he fought with an angel and he won. So whether or not that fighting with an angel is meant as a physical event that happened, so that's a debate that's not a debate, it's a claim of the Rambams, that it wasn't a physical event that happened, and that's not what was going on, it was all in a vision. So how you would understand this pasuk in Hosea then would mean the fact that he had the vision which he did it would be the sign, but if he really did it, as the simplest reading of the pasuk Amar, that he had whatever it means to wrestle with an angel, and pasuk Hey continues that Vayasar el malach vayuchal bacha vayichanein lo. So in our pasuk, the Radak points out that in the Torah he doesn't tell us this, but he says either it's an exaggeration or hyperbole, or it's just an event that happened, but the Torah didn't feel the need to tell it to us until it got to here, that the angel not only asked him to let him go, but begged and cried to him, right, to let him go, and then Beit El Yimtza'enu Visham Yidaber Imanu. So Rashi reads this as, when the angel was giving Yaakov the bracha, he also promised him that Hashem would meet up with them, with the two of them, with the angel and with Yaakov, and would confirm the bracha, and later on, in Chumash, you have an incident where Hashem comes to Yaakov in Beit El, and he says, your name won't be Yaakov anymore, it's going to be Yisrael. So that would confirm Rashi's reading of it. Radak thinks that piece of Beit El is that it's Hosea the Navi speaking and saying that Hashem will find us, the Nevi'im. So he says him and Amos, us, the Nevi'im, to give us Nevuot about the Jewish people, and that will happen in Beit El. Either way, the point that's being made here is that the Jewish people are supposed to know and understand and see that in the very structure of their realities, you have miracles, you have Hashem involved, right? Pasuk Vav, Hashem Elokei Tzatzivakot, Hashem Zichron, God, the King, the Master of all of the hosts of heaven, His name is God, as Yukei Vavke. The Radak does a little bit, I'm not going to get into it here, a little bit of sort of names of God analysis and saying what's being said here on the basis of that. So, which is a part of what's being said here, that that Yaakov, that Hashem reveals himself to us in various names with various messages, and those messages are connections to us, and that's what's going on with the miracles. So the idea being, here we are, an abandoning people. The Northern Kingdom is certainly abandoning Hashem. Right after, this, the Southern Kingdom will also abandon Hashem, and it's all a mistake, because embedded in our histories are reminders that we should have, and then we'll get to more of them later in the parak, that embedded in our histories are reminders that should keep us to know that we have to do is serve Hashem. So, and yet we don't, and we'll see other ways that we don't in the coming psukim that are very clearly, I think, very clearly reminiscent of things that are going on today. So in Pasuk, Zayin v'ata be'elokecha tashuv chesed mishpat shemor v'kavi elokecha tamid. All you need to do, I don't know the right adjective for it. Distressing, upsetting, shocking. It's something surprising and striking. And I use those words too often, I think. So I'm trying to find other words to think about. But the pasuk here is telling us how simple it is to serve Hashem. You have to return to Hashem. You have to think of Hashem. You have to keep chesed u'mishpat. You have to be honest. You have to be straightforward. You have to do what Hashem tells you to do. And you have to turn to Hashem and look to Hashem as being the source of everything good that comes to you. So you find people who say that they do this and speak like they do this, but when you dig a little bit underneath their reality, not dig, if they often they'll just tell you things that they're doing that that go against this. A striking story that I once had years ago with an elderly man who was a musmach of a yeshiva. He had learned with Gedolim, really Gedolim, and he had learned seriously, and he was a firm guy his whole life, and his grandson was being bar mitzvah, and the grandson was learning with some Rav, and the Rav told the grandson, you know, you can't lie as part of a thing. You can't lie, you can't mislead people into thinking something that's not true. So the grandfather is complaining about these strange ideas that this man is putting in his head. He's complaining to me. So he says to me, you know, he says, well, you can't mislead people. And I said, I guess it sounds right that you can't, you know, under what circumstances would you think you can? So he says to me, sometimes in business you have to mislead people. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you have to say things like, oh, well, I can get it from this competitor for a lot less money. So I said, would it be true that you get it from that competitor for a lot less money? He says, no, but that's what you say in business. So that's a question of chesed and mishpat shemor, of keeping chesed and mishpat, of keeping justice, of keeping righteousness, of being honest about things. And I have never really been in business, but I hear stories from people and they casually mention things that would seem to go against the standards of right and justice that are being spoken about here. And these are from honest Orthodox Jews who keep Shabbos carefully and keep kosher carefully. They think that they are serving Hashem and they're seeking to serve Hashem. That's their self-picture. And then you look a little bit underneath, and then you see that it's not quite going that way. So that's the Pasuk Zion. That's the problem. Kinan biyado, Pasuk Chet says, Kinan biyado mosnei mirma, but as a merchant, Kinan here means as a merchant, and this is what the Jewish people are doing. They have false measures, la ashok ahave, and they enjoy stealing from people and taking from people under false pretenses, and, you know, finagling in a way that's not fully honest. And I think, sadly, you have this very often in many circles, at least rumor reports. You know, it's never the people that I'm talking to. They're never the ones who are doing it, but certainly they report that other people are doing things that are not as fully honest as you would like them to be. Pasuk Ted, Vayomer Ephraim, Ach Asharti, Matzati, only Kol Yigiyai Lo Yimtzuli. And Ephraim says, I'm rich. I found my wealth. I've made myself wealthy. So that's something that you have very often, certainly in America, in a capitalist democracy, where we have this idea that people get ahead by virtue of their own merit. So somebody gets rich, they assume it's them who did it. And that's the way Rashi says it, right? They say, all of my troubles that I worked on, he says, all my troubles, all of my work, I said that it's all good, but it's not going to be enough to make up for the sins that I've sinned along the way. And the Radak points out that it's hefech v'kaveh elokech, right? The end of Pasuk Zion was, turn to Hashem. And instead, Ephraim, the only king says, I'm rich, and I'm rich because of my efforts. So that's where I was getting to. In America today, when people get rich, they say to themselves, many, many people say to themselves, I'm rich because I'm wealthy, because I did the right thing, because I'm a smart guy, because I knew this market, or I understood that market, and so I got rich. So first, the fact that it seems not to be true in technical terms. More and more, I think people are realizing that's not even true. It's not even true in the simplest way of saying that it's true, because it turns out that there's really a matter of timing. So people, for example, I just finished reading a book called The Wisdom of Crowds, an excellent book. But one of the points that he makes is that people who are excellent managers in one environment and very successful, when they're brought into other corporations under slightly other conditions, very often are not nearly as successful. And it suggests that that while they have a role to play and a contribution to make in terms of the success of various companies, it has often been over exaggerated. And so this was about CEO compensation, and saying that very often the idea of paying CEOs so much money is unclear as to why it happened, because they're not really as central and vital and essential to the corporation's success as it might have seemed. So here, whether or not it's a corporation, but here that idea becomes very important, because that idea is that Ephraim says to themselves, oh, I'm rich because I made myself rich. And you often hear as well people who will say they're slightly firmer than that, so they're slightly more aware of their need to turn to Hashem than that. And so they'll say things like, oh, everything I have is because of Hashem. But then you look at the way they conduct themselves and the way they conduct their wealth, and they don't do it with that kind of humility. They assume they know better how to run this organization or that organization, or how to give their tzedakah, or they know who deserves money or doesn't. So they approach many decisions in life with an arrogance or a confidence, perhaps confidence is a better word, that comes from their feelings of certainty that they've learned things in life when, and sometimes it's true, sometimes they have insight to bear. And one of the things I've often tried to convince people who have made huge amounts of money is that they should try to bring those insights to bear by going and working for nonprofit organizations that could use their expertise and their experience greatly. It's not to deny that they had some skill that they brought to bear there. But it is to say that it's not only that, because if Hashem doesn't want you to get rich, or if Hashem, right, if he doesn't have assistance from that, so that's not real. And in an American business environment, it's particularly true, because there, so much is politics and so much is who you know and what you know. It's not by any means a system that just rewards good efforts and good ideas and good talent. We'd like to think of that. That's the ideal that we're striving towards. It's certainly not true in America today at all. And so then, reading back, we're seeing Hashem complaining about it in Ephraim's case when they are sinning, and yet Hashem is letting them get wealthy, and they come to think, oh, clearly it's me, it's Hashem, it's me. And so Hashem points out, all that money has no way of helping them atone for the various sins that they've done. And this is Pasuk Yud. V'anochi Hashem Elokecha Mitzrayim, I am Hashem your God from Mitzrayim. I've known you. Od oshivcha va'ohalim kimei mo'ed. I am going to return you one day soon. It'll still happen that I will return you to ohalim. So Radak just seems to think it means I'm going to make you once again become aware of all the things of all of our relationship of old, and you'll have to become fully cognizant of your reliance upon, of our reliance upon Hashem. Rashi thinks Ahalim is a reference to Yaakov Avinu, that we're going to be returned to the Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim. We're going to return to a time when we sit and we study Torah and we learn from Torah. So that, as I've pointed on other occasions, is a theme of Rashi's, the idea that studying of Torah is essential and vital. I would only point out that Rashi lived in an environment where study of Torah, as important as it was part of a society in which there was much business and commerce going on. So I'm not sure that Rashi meant that all you'll do is study Torah. Rashi, I think for that, I think Rashi would have thought that's a great ideal, because it was so foreign, because it was so out of the realm of possibility in Rashi's time that somebody could just sit and learn as many people do today. So I'm not sure that's what Rashi means, but he certainly means that the study of Torah will be a dominant and an important shaping influence and environment in the way you act. Yaakovin also is Yaakov Ishtam Hoshev O'alim for a long period of time, and then he goes off to live with Laban, and he goes off to be a shepherd, and he goes off to this, he goes off to that. So I wouldn't read that Rashi as that's what the idea will be, that you'll just sit in Ohalim. But the idea is that he'll return us to sitting in Ohalim so that the study of Torah can shape how we are involved in all those other business endeavors. Which would suggest also that the pieces of Torah being studied are not only those that have to do with Shabbos and Kashrus and Davening and what we might call ritual law, but it'll have to do with the kinds of laws that will shape how you run a government, right, that will shape how you interact with others, that will shape whether you act with justice and righteousness and all those kinds of things. So if it were to be true that you had a government and political parties that come from, that are supposed to, that come from people who are supposedly observant and orthodox and Shomrei Torah mitzvos, and those same parties are then implicated in scandals having to do with bribery and taking money wrongly and things like that, and you have, you know, orthodox businessmen who are giving the bribes and giving the money, so that would make you wonder whether their yeshivat ohalim, whether their sitting in tents, has had the kind of impact on their conduct of themselves that you would think the study of Torah would do. So that's, I think, part of what Hashem is saying. I'm going to return you to the ohalim, according to Rashi, so either that's just an awareness of Hashem in general, or it's awareness of Torah in particular that will then shape and get us to realize our roots and go back to our roots. And Hashem says that I've until now given you a lot of Nevi'im and a lot of Chazon, a lot of prophecies, and in the hands of the Nevi'im, Adameh, I have appeared many times. So Adameh, just the Ramban points out that Chazal use this whole idea of Yeran of Nevi'im Adameh to verify a principle of faith that the Rambam includes in his principles of faith, but that's just well known and well understood that that all the Nevi'im except for Moshe Rabbeinu saw through what's called an Aspaklaria She'inam Me'ira. They saw, you can't see Hashem directly, and that doesn't mean physically, it means even in a vision, even in prophecy, however prophecy works, but even then there are intermediary factors that are protecting or stopping the Navi from having the full vision, because no Navi could take the full vision. But in the case of most Nevi'im, the Psukim, we understand the Psukim to mean, and there are Psukim and Chumash that say it as well, we understand the Psukim to mean, in the case of most Nevi'im, that barrier is even stronger or sharper than it was in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the way that we say that is that we contrasted aspaklaria she'ina mi'ira, so a speculum that doesn't shine, or an aspaklaria that mi'ira, or one that does shine, and the idea being whether or not the lens through which you see Hashem is one that adds more light or that just blocks and sort of reduces the vision of Hashem. In addition to that, if you had a nevim adameh, the Radak, I think, has it referred to. Radak says two things. One is he suggests that it refers to future Nevi'im that are coming, but I think that then there would be a prediction that's going to be coming. I think that Hosea might mean there already have been many Nevi'im. So I pointed out at the beginning of the book of Hosea that Hosea is one of the earliest Nevi'im who have his own Sefer. But all throughout the book of Malachim, you saw that there were Nevi'im around. Some of those Nevi'im only get mentioned once or twice. Some of the Nevi'im get much more, like Elio and Elisha. But many of the Nevi'im don't get mentioned at all because their nevuah, their prophecies were for their time, but did not have any lasting, eternal message. So we had a Nevi'im, I think Hashem is just saying that even until now, you've had Nevi'im over and over again, and yet you're not paying attention to them. Pasuk Yud Bet, Im Gilad Aven Achshav Hayu, Vagilgal Shevarim Zibechu Gamiz Bichotam Gigalim Al Talmei Sadai. So when it comes to Gilad, though, Hashem says that there's no success there, right? Gilad, Radak points out that Gilad is the original place where they start to do evil. That's where the Aven happens. And they're also the ones who go to exile first. Back in the book of Malachim, you'll remember that the tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan went into exile even before the northern kingdom went into exile. And they offered a lot of sacrifices, and they had a lot of altars, and those altars like galim al talmei sadai, like waves upon, or I'm sorry, not likewise, like stone heaps, like galim, like a gal, like stone heaps on a planted field, meaning they're just distractions and obstructions to what we're trying to do. And in that context, the Gemara in Sanhedrin quotes of Yochanan is saying that it got to be so bad that there was no plowed field, there was no furrow in the land of Israel that Achav didn't put Navodah Zarah there and bow down to it. He has from Kamiz B'chotam Karalim Al Talmei Sadai, that all of my Tlamim, all of the furrows, had these idol worships. Whether that's an exaggeration or not, the point being that Hashem is saying Gilad started it, and then it leads to Gilgal, and it leads to it happening, that the idol worship becomes so endemic and so entrenched that it's as if, or maybe it's literally, but even if it's not literally, even if you're just, it could just be true that if your whole framework is that you think of idol worship, then it might even be true that before you plow any furrow, you'd start it off by saying, as we would expect a very religious person to do, you start off by saying, by bowing down to whatever your idol worship is and saying, you know, let this plowing be, or let this planting be successful in this furrow. So it all depends on context. If your context is that you're turning to Hashem for that, we think of that as very good. But if your context is you're turning to your idol with that, so that's a sign of exactly how corrupted the people has become, and that's what Hashem is pointing out here. So Pasuk Yud Gimel we'll get to, and then we only have a few seconds left in the Perek. Pasuk Yud Gimel, but it's going to bring us back to this thing. And so in this Perek, I would note, there's not a lot of threat of punishment here, right? We've seen a lot of that in Hosea. There's been a lot of bitterness. And then there was punishment in a less bitter mode. And here there's not even a mention of punishment. It's really a question of trying, and this too is going to fail. So when all of your mechanisms for trying to bring about change fail, what happens next is a question. We know the answer that Hashem came to, because the answer Hashem came to is, what happens next is you have to have all the destruction and all the terrible times come. But the question, I think, is one that stands in other time periods as well. If you try gentle and you try harsh and you try gentle harsh, what do you try next? So here, the themes in this parak that Hosea has been bringing to the Jews' attention have been themes of you could have been good. Here's the way of what good would look like. You had a history that would tell you to be good, and yet you're not being good. You're not living up to the model that your history would seem to have led you to be possible for you. Right? So, we had miracles in our past that told us. We had Nevi'im telling us stuff. And yet, we chose to turn away. And all we had to do was turn to Hashem and act with justice and righteousness and believe in Hashem and act faithfully with Hashem. And then everything would be good. And that's where we're failing. So the answers are clear. The solutions are clear. It's just a question of getting away from those instincts and instead turning towards Hashem, listening to Nevi'im, listening to those who have the messages of Hashem for us and following them faithfully, not saying, well, I made my money my way, I made this, I made that, and I'm rich, and I'm well known, and I'm famous, and therefore clearly my understanding of how the world works must be the way the world ought to work. So those would be the seem to be the messages that Hashem is trying to send. And in Pasuk Gimel goes on, Vayivrach Yaakov Sedei Aram, Vayavod Yisrael B'isha V'isha Shamar. So this actually becomes the Haftarah for Parashat Vayetze because of the reference to this. But in our context, it's clear what we're talking about. Vayivrach Yaakov Sedei Aram, Yaakov has to run away to Aram. And so the Mefarshim Rashi Radak stressed that it's Hashem saying again that He protected us. And so the image we had, before we had the image of Yaakov as one of the clear miracles in our very foundation as a nation that told us that Hashem was on our side, as it were, that Hashem was seeking to produce good for us and therefore produces miraculous good for us. So we had that. So therefore, here's another example of it, that Hashem protects us from Esav when Yaakov runs away to Aram. But also, there's a stress here on Yaakov's ability to be long-term faithful to a goal and to a project, right? Because it says, Vayivrach Yaakov Sedei Aram, and he Vayavod Yisrael B'isha, he makes a deal to get a wife by working, by doing work for Lavan, right? Uvisha Shamar, and for that woman, he was Shomer. He did his work faithfully and well. We have that scene in at the end of Parashat Vayetze when Yaakov is leaving Lavan, and Lavan comes to argue with him about why he left in the way he did, and Yaakov says, what are you complaining about? I have worked for you faithfully for all these years, Genufti Yom, Genufti Laila, and I would be cold in the winter, and hot in the summer, and if any of the animals died, I would pay them all, I would pay for them. So even though he's dealing with Lavan, even though he's dealing with the master of trickery, whom Chazal see that way, as always tricking him and changing his wages, and Yaakov says that as well, nonetheless, Yaakov acts in some sense faithfully with him in terms of keeping to his end of watching the flocks like he said he would. So there's an image of faithfulness here that I think is important in Pasuk Yudalid. Ratifies it. And Hashem sent us Nevi'im to do His side of the bargain that we had with Hashem to redeem us as Hashem had promised, and to keep us on the right way. And here's where we fall down. And yet, we, in this case, the Northern Kingdom, but it's applicable to other parts of the Jewish people as well. We, Hich'is Ephraim Tamurim, we create great anger in Hashem by our faithlessness, by our failure to keep to what we should have, and therefore it's going to come back to haunt those who have done it this way, right? His embarrassment will be returned to him by his master. So we come around again to a distressing message, but that's because there's no way around it. Hosea is a Navi who is the first of the push of Nevi'im that's going to lead into the destruction of the Northern Kingdom, the exile of the Northern Kingdom. And his job is, sadly for him and for us, his job is to ready the people to make them understand what's coming, or try to make them understand what's coming and why it's coming, and to get those messages across. But we see it being done here, and yet a different approach, a different attack to that problem of how you get people to understand this. Here's one more attempt, a reminder of our roots, and that embedded in us from our beginnings is the ability to do better than we've been doing until now, and not to lose faith in our ability to really succeed. That was the attempt here. Like most of these attempts, we don't see it having had a deeply different effect than others, but it's an attempt worth watching, and an attempt that we, hopefully, will gain from in our own times. Have a great day.